KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
Ace has always been the helpful place, and we're about to get even more helpful by offering instant savings to Ace Rewards members. Not a member? Just sign up when you get here to start saving right at the register.
Ace Corner Hardware is celebrating Memorial Day with memorable prices through May 29th. Check out their outdoor collection. Save $100 on a three-person swing with canopy for only $179.99. Super special relaxer chair, $34.99. Limit two per customer. Seven-piece outdoor dining set, $499. Weber grill, only $399, with free assembly and free local delivery. Folding rocking chair, $59.99. And stacking chairs, only $22.99. Be the lucky owner of your very own pet bird when you shop from Ace's extensive outdoor collection and enter a drawing to win $250 towards your favorite bird and cage. Ace has it all. Ace Corner Hardware, 2266 Nostrand Avenue, Wheaton Avenue's H&I in Brooklyn. Parking is available.
Ace, the helpful place.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
See store for details. Must be an Ace Rewards member to receive instant savings. Available through the end of the month.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
Good evening and welcome back to MASS Radio Show on Family Matters. This evening we have two very special people that work with families that deal with eating disorders. MASS Show deals with all different mental health issues and family matters. We deal with drugs, alcohol, addiction, eating disorders. We deal with all mental health, bipolar, schizophrenia. MASP is 20 years we've been having a helpline for families to call in for their loved ones dealing with any mental health issues. We offer support groups. Dr. Tricia Tia runs a support group in Brooklyn, Sarah Kahan, Dr. Tversky, Benzion Tversky. If you're interested in attending any of our support groups or getting a referral for a specialist, a rehab, a therapist, a doctor, a psychiatrist, call MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. Our number is 718-758-0400. Today we are going to be speaking about eating disorders in general, awareness of eating disorders. We have on this evening Sarah Bateman, that's an LCSW, that specializes in eating disorders and has a private practice. She also is the liaison for the Renfrew Center, an eating disorder inpatient and outpatient program. Sarah's going to talk about both Renfrew's program in brief, but all about eating disorders and how she can help family members in her private practice and in general. Then we have Marcia Bodenstein, who's the CEO of Start Fresh, and she's been doing this for 33 years. She's also a food addiction specialist at the Realization Center. So welcome, Sarah, and welcome, Marcia, this evening to Family Matters.
Thank you.
Sarah, I'd like to start with you. Can you tell us, can you just give us a real definition of what an eating disorder is and can be?
Sure. There are several different types of eating disorders. There's anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and most commonly, there's when it doesn't meet the diagnostic criteria for any one of those, but people actually switch between different symptoms. Anorexia means that a person is not taking in enough calories for their height and physical activity and their age. So basically, their body weight is lower than it's okay for them to function in a healthy way. Bulimia means that they're eating large amounts of foods and then engaging in compensatory behaviors to get rid of those calories. It can be vomiting, over-exercise, taking pills. And binge eating disorder is when somebody is eating large amounts of food even when not hungry and they're not engaging in any compensatory behaviors. As I said, most of the time, people don't meet the criteria for one of those. They kind of switch between symptoms. And I want to really emphasize that just because you don't meet what you think of as an eating disorder doesn't mean you don't have a problem, doesn't mean that you can't get help.
Yes. So there are many different ways that a young adult, a teenager, a young married woman. I mean, today everybody wants to be skinny besides me. No, I'm joking. But, you know, there is a lot of pressure out there about being slim, being skinny. Even though in the world today they are advertising, you know, size 14 plus in some of the English magazines. But our regular, you know, girls today want to be skinny. They're getting married. They have pressures to look good. Doesn't that add to some pressures while getting ready to go out on dates, et cetera? Sarah, do you want to
talk about that? Absolutely. There is an enormous amount of pressure in our society, our culture, our community. And many people would argue the Jewish community specifically. Of course, we don't have data proving this, but that's what we hear over and over, that this is what matchmakers are looking for. This is what young men are looking for when they're looking to meet women. This is something that I hear people say and repeat over and over, that the number one question men ask is, what's a woman's size? So absolutely, there is an enormous amount of pressure on women to be thin and meet societal pressures of what we consider pretty, that the number one question people are asking is she thin? An eating disorder is not about being thin. I would say that being thin becomes the focus of a lot of other problems. So it's important to differentiate that this isn't the cause of the problem. This is more the focus. This is more what's easy to... The behaviors become easy to engage in, and the thoughts often become the focus when other things are going wrong. It's never just one thing.
Yes, and so it's a use of control, correct?
Excuse me?
It's a young adults use it to control when they, you know, some use drugs when they have issues and they self-medicate. Some self-mutilate, they cut themselves to release the pain, the pressure that they're controlling, whatever it is that's bothering them. And sometimes an eating disorder is another way to control one's pain.
Sure.
Is that how, Sarah, can you talk about that, please?
Yes, that's one way of putting it, that food becomes the good girl's drug, that, you know, somebody who wants to please and doesn't want to do things wrong is not going to engage in typical rebellious behaviors such as drug and alcohol, that food becomes the safe way, which, of course, we know in the field it's not really safe, but it can seem that way at first, that it's an easy way to deal with feelings. You mentioned control. often there's an aspect of not having needs met, not feeling that one has a voice or can communicate or that others want to listen or hear what they have to say or what they're experiencing. Possibly not having choices, not feeling like they have more options that they can engage in. So food and bodies become something that they can control and focus on when they can't deal with the other things around them. But also, sometimes it's just recognizing feelings. It's depression and anxiety and not knowing how to manage those, not being able to sit with what they consider negative feelings and not feeling that they have other options of what to do with those emotions. So in treatment, we would work on being okay, identifying feelings, being okay, expressing them, communicating them, and learning to work on the real issues instead of just focusing on this idea of being thin or having to control your appearance.
Yes. So we have on today Marcia Bodenstein. Marcia, I wanted to ask you what brought you to dealing with families, starting, you know, working with Start Fresh, 33 years. How did you get involved with dealing with this topic of eating disorders?
First of all, thank you for asking me to be here. And before I go to that, three things I want to address. Thank you so much for saying this is a mental health issue. What brought me here was an eating disorder. The other thing I want to mention before I talk about myself is you mentioned young people. I am now treating two women in their 50s for eating disorder. And the other thing is, I think that men have also been ignored because we have also treated men and boys with eating disorders.
Yes, outline. We have parents calling in about their sons mm-hmm. that have eating disorders. And you're right, that's not usually spoken about. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. the silent illness mm-hmm. for the men. So thank you for bringing that up.
So what brought me was an eating disorder. I was, and from a young age, and I thought it was a weight problem. If I could only lose weight, but I've been all over the map. I have been anorexic, failed at that because I couldn't starve for long. But what brought me to that was it was the only thing I could control in my life at that moment. You know, I could control what I didn't take in. And if I could deny those needs, I could deny my other needs as well. I was bulimic, where I would throw up and laxatives and broke every blood vessel in my eyes. I did that for a short while, but my main eating disorder career was binge eating and eating large amounts of food, unplanned, thousands and thousands of calories until I was either sick or passed out. And, of course, I understand now it has nothing to do with food. It has nothing to do with eating. I ate my way up to 262 pounds and could have kept going if I didn't get some help. And the realization that what I was throwing up, what I was not eating, what I was binging on was not food but feelings, a way to deal. You know, it was much easier for me to go to a weight control program and try to lose weight and try to adhere to a diet than talk about my angers, my fears, my frustrations, my feelings. So I was doing, you know, some things, totally different careers, and I came to Start Fresh to yet again address what I thought was a weight issue. Fast forward 33 years later, many strides have been made in eating disorders. Many strides have been made in the firm community that it's not a hidden thing anymore and help is available and help is called for. So I had to address all of those issues, and 140 pounds down or 142 pounds down, I realized that hunger is not necessarily for food. And eating, it is a disorder, and it has to do with my mental health, my feelings, my emotions, things maybe that I can't express that I have taken out on eating, on not eating, on binge eating, and putting all the emphasis, like Sarah said, on weight, when weight is not really the issue. So that's what brought me here. When I do treat people, the compassion that I needed, I'm hoping to give. The small steps, I'm hoping to give. And the acceptance of where you are today and the acceptance of a process. This is not overnight. And the first thing is the shame. S-H-A-M-E, should have already mastered everything. The shame that I lived with, I no longer live with, and that's really the first thing that I address. And the other thing that I want to say is when I deal with the families, the first thing the mother always asks, what did I do wrong? Moms, you did nothing wrong. Your child has an illness. If your child, God forbid, a million times had diabetes, God forbid, a million times had a cold, the flu, there would be no shame. You wouldn't ask, what did I do wrong? Mom, you didn't do anything wrong. You did everything right. But the child now needs your full compassion, full support, and the child needs help. So that's what brought me here.
Thank you. Thank you, Marsh Bodenstein. This is Ruchama Bistritsky-Klatman, and I'm the founder and executive director of MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. We've been doing this for over 20 years, 45,000 families later. We're here to talk about family matters. And tonight we have Sarah Bateman and Marsha Bodenstein. Thank you, Marsha, for sharing your personal story. And I wish you continued luck and continued good health.
Thank you.
Sarah, I want to go back to Sarah. Sarah, can you talk about, do you ever have males, young men, that have eating disorders?
I do. And I thank Marsha for bringing that up also, because we know that at least 5 to 10 of the eating disorder population is male, and it's possibly a lot more than that, but that men are overlooked as having eating disorders. There might be more shame in coming forward and more likelihood to not view their issues as eating disorders because it's so commonly thought of as a female issue. I know that the men that I see often get a diagnosis of bulimia, and it's often because of a focus on exercise. There's binging on large amounts of foods, and the compensatory behavior is that they need to spend hours at the gym to work off the calories that they've eaten.
So, again, for the listeners that are just tuning in, Sarah, can you describe once again the different kinds of eating disorders?
Sure. Anorexia is basically self-imposed starvation, not taking in enough calories to sustain their height in the context of their age, physical activity, and needs. Bulimia, there's no weight requirement to get a diagnosis of bulimia, but a person will engage in binge eating, which means eating large amounts of food in a short amount of time, accompanied by a feeling of being out of control while eating that food. And then they will engage in compensatory behaviors to get rid of those calories. That can be self-induced vomiting, taking pills, attempts to adhere to diets but often failing, and can also be over-exercise, which what I was saying just now is often what we see in males with eating disorders the most. I'm sorry, and then to give a definition of binge eating disorder, binge eating is when somebody engages in the same binge eating behaviors, but without any compensatory behaviors. And that's by definition. I'll just add that in my practice, in pretty much every person I've ever seen with binge eating, there is a tendency to also restrict calories to try and make up for the binge. They may not over-exercise or self-induce vomit or take diet pills, but there's often trying to starve themselves, either punish themselves, feel that they don't deserve it, won't eat in front of people the next day, and then will kind of repeat the binge when they get hungry enough. They'll end up eating large amounts of food at night, secretly, in private again.
Sarah, I'd like to discuss the mothers when they see their child, their loved one, their husband, their brothers, their sons, maybe having some sort of eating disorder, you know, it's very painful, and sometimes we go into denial. Sometimes we get very scared, we're fearful of what the reality may be, and it can paralyze somebody. Can you talk about that first phone call after Mass gets the call? Mom calls up, they want a referral for a professional, and we would refer to you, Sarah, in your private practice. Can you talk about how to help that mother and to know whether or not it is, in fact, an eating disorder and where to go from here?
Sure, that's a great question. I'll start by just saying that I agree with what you said earlier, Marcia. It's not about blame, and it's so important for mothers to know that calling. There's often this idea that mothers will be blamed. There's often this idea of this narcissistic injury also. Oh, if something's wrong with my child, I must have done something wrong, so I take this as a problem with myself. When people call me, my number one thought is, what can we do to help, and how can this be productive? Not who are we going to point the finger at who did something wrong. Therapy is found to be most helpful when families are involved. So the first thing to know is that you don't have to know the answers before you call. You can let the professionals help you with that. If you're not sure if there's a problem, you don't have to figure it out first. As I was saying earlier, most people who get treatment for eating disorders don't fit into one of the major categories of anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating. Most people, the vast majority, fit into the category of other specified feeding or eating disorder, where they don't stick to one set of symptoms. And they often don't realize that it's still a problem and they still are deserving and can benefit greatly from getting professional treatment. So let the professionals help you. Let the professionals do the diagnosing. Let the professionals advise you on the best course of treatment. I know that if you were to call me, I would just tell you that it was so great that you picked up the phone. I know that taking that first step can be the hardest part sometimes. And you don't have to know the answers. You don't have to know that it's a problem. You do have to know that by calling and getting help early, the prognosis, the chances of things working out better is so much higher.
What about if a young adult or a married person or just like Marcia said, somebody in the 50-year-old, you know, person that she's treating, what if they don't want any family involvement? There are many times that the addict or the person with a mental health issue or an eating disorder doesn't want the help of a mother, a father, or sibling, or a relative to be involved. How important is it that there is family involvement when it comes to an eating disorder?
Well, our research shows that when families are involved, especially for adolescents, the prognosis of treatment is better. However, you bring up a really good point. Sometimes, in some cases, I'm not giving an umbrella judgment that parents are at fault, but in some situations, when the person is struggling with things their parents have done or their relationship with their parents, sometimes the best thing for them is not to have their parents involved, to be able to have a voice with people who do listen to them. In those cases, we might work on accepting what their parents can give them and not asking for something that their parents can't provide. Or we might focus on identifying other supporters who can be involved in their treatment. A therapeutic relationship can help get started, but we don't want people to have to stay stuck in treatment to get the support they need. We will always want to identify people in their lives or help them figure out how they can make connections outside of treatment so that they can receive support in their own lives and in their own worlds.
So if there is a teenager that wants to go to a support group and is not ready yet to go to individual treatment, there are support groups for eating disorders, correct? You are involved.
I'm sorry, you said that wants to go into a support group?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, somebody that wants to start with a support group.
I guess it would depend on the situation and what's available. I know that a lot of groups require that you also be in individual therapy at the same time.
Right. So, you know, in general, on the MASC helpline, when it comes to eating disorders, we also work with doctors that then offer programs, let's say through the Jewish Board and Family Children's Services in Borough Park. There are doctors that work with them. And this way, the young adult, or, you know, even if you're in your 40s or 50s, the person, the identified client, will go to a doctor to be assessed and have a plan. There are times that the doctor will say, you're not ready for a support group. You first need to be in treatment. What about if somebody resists treatment? What would you say to those parents?
I pretty much try to work with people wherever they are. When people come to me, I know that, you know, everybody has their own situation, so I can't give an umbrella answer for everyone. Everybody together. There's going to be situations where somebody is at a point where they're medically not safe, and we might need to hospitalize them against their will, even if they're not ready. And it may not be helpful for them emotionally at that point, but a lot of times when their bodies and brains are malnourished, they can't make those decisions. And in other cases, sometimes doing some individual therapy, with, you know, which may not be the point that they are assessed to need. They might need a higher level of care, but they might not be willing to do that. Doing some individual therapy can help them realize that they could benefit from that. So it's really a case-by-case situation. We'd work with the treatment team together to decide, is this safe? Can we handle this? And my first thought is that I'm always going to try to work with a person where they are, because if we're forcing them against their will, it's not really going to be helpful for them in the long run. I'd rather have everybody
yes.
I work with be on board.
Right. And the parents, you know, they go to, we offer groups at MASC for parents to help move them along. You know, the struggle of having to admit a child against the child's will to a hospital is very, very, very painful for a parent to do. And lots of times it could take months before a parent is ready to do what they need to do. But we recommend at MASC that they get a professional therapist that deals with whatever it is they're dealing with, and in addition that they attend the MASC groups, so that at the MASC groups the parents, you know, can help support them, educate them, guide them to the point that the doctor is recommending, whether that's inpatient or an intensive outpatient program, to help their family member, their loved one that's struggling with the eating disorder. Marsha, I'm just wondering, what worked for you when you were going for treatment for your binge eating that you shared with us your story?
First of all, I want to piggyback a little bit on what's going on. When I get a call, it is often not from the parents. It is from the school. And the eating disorders are very often spotted by a child, a girl's peers. And finally, the girl will finally report it to someone in school. So that's a lot of the calls I get are from principals, from guidance counselors in schools. And then first to involve the parents. But I have had situations where the girl will talk to someone in school faster than once she agrees to talk, because, you know, first there's the denial. No, no, I'm not doing that, you know. But when it finally comes to the fore and she'll talk to someone in school, we can attack it that way. School psychologists, guidance counselors, teachers, etc., and then, of course, the parents involved. But what worked for me, it didn't work for me for a very, very long time. There was a lot of denial. It was all about the weight. It was all about being thin. When I finally realized that being thin was not the answer, because I had lost a significant amount of weight and still was doing what I was doing, and found other ways. I found diet pills. I really found dangerous ways. Then I knew that, it comes to a point where you can't even lie to yourself anymore. And I believe that at the point of desperation, and each of us reaches desperation at different levels, I knew that I had to take some suggestion from someone else. I couldn't do it alone. And that's really what worked for me. But it wasn't my family. It was other places.
What age was that when you finally...
Oh, gosh. It was all ages. I started with this eating disorder long before I was 10 years old. I took my first diet pill when I was 10 years old. And I am 68. So I have been dealing with this all of my life. When I finally realized that it was a disorder and not just a weight issue, I would say about 15 years ago. So I was not one of those young people. I was older, an older person in treatment.
Wow. So it can go with you a lifetime, like all other mental health issues.
Sarah, and I just want to say another thing, Ruhama. It doesn't only affect physical. It's social, it's financial, it's medical, it's mental, health-wise, it affects every area of life. Because my eating disorder was the first thing on my mind. It was always, what am I eating, what am I not eating, what can I eat, what can't I eat, how can I get rid of it, how can I get it, how can I do it by myself. So it's like the first and foremost thing, and affects every other area of life.
Yep, but all mental health issues do go with us a lifetime, with Tamar. So whether it's drugs and alcohol is a disease, the client needs to be in treatment, 12-step meeting, having a counselor, going for your therapy. This is the same eating disorders as an addiction and any other mental health issue that they may have is a lifetime battle. I'm just wondering, Sarah, would you like to comment about the lifetime battle even once somebody gets healthy with the eating disorder, healthier with the eating disorder, and they've been through treatment? If you can just describe what aftercare would look like, please.
Sure. You want me to say what aftercare would look like, or what is the long term?
Well, first aftercare and then long term, if you can, please.
Okay, so I'll just comment. At the Renfrew Center, we have different levels of treatment. We start with residential, and then we have a day treatment program that meets 5 days a week, and then an intensive outpatient program 3 days a week. And then people continue to outpatient groups, usually once a week. People can come in at any level of care. They don't have to go through the steps in order. They can be assessed to start where they need to be. And they can also move up and down based on what they need. So in kind of following the steps for somebody who starts at the beginning and goes through, after completing programs, they would continue outpatient therapy and either be just individual or in a group also once or twice a week. What I want to add is that people do recover. I've been working with eating disorders for 15 years, and if I didn't see people recover and get better, I probably wouldn't still be doing this. So that's something that I like to share, that I have that hope, and I see the positive stories along with the struggles and the difficulties, that people do get better. People do reach a point where they're not thinking about food all the time and not obsessing over their bodies and are able to think about other issues and engage in their lives. When they're engaged in the eating disorder is everything. It's their relationship, it's their passion, it's their secrets, and they can't engage in other things. When people are able to work through these issues, it doesn't have to sit with them all the time, and it doesn't have to be their lives. It doesn't have to consume them. I've gotten letters from people saying, you know, I just got through the holiday season, and I thought of you afterwards when I realized that I wasn't obsessing over food this whole time. I was able to enjoy my family. Or I didn't think about food at all. It's not my concern. Yes, I have to plan sometimes. I have to take care of myself still, but I trust myself to deal with what I need to do now.
Wow, there's a lot to talk about on eating disorders, and we will talk more in the future. We are going to have on now Devorah Bodenheim will be joining us, but first I'd like to say thank you, both Sarah Bateman, who's a licensed, certified social worker. She has an office in New Jersey, and she is the liaison for Renfrew. I'd like to thank Marcia Bodenstein, who's the CEO of Start Fresh and the liaison with Food Addiction in Realization Center. So I'd like to thank you both, and I hope to speak with you again soon. Thank you, Marcia, and thank you, Sarah, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
For those listeners that are just coming in now, we are talking about eating disorders. I'm Ruchama Bistritsky-Klatman, and I'm the host for tonight's show on Family Matters. Devorah Bodenheim is with us. Welcome, Devorah.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for being with us this evening. Devorah, we spoke about eating disorders with Marcia and with Sarah, and I want to now just bring it more personal. If we can talk about the nitty-gritty, when teenagers start using laxatives, when they're using diet pills, how it can turn into an eating disorder. Can you describe how it can go from something very innocent and then become something very, very painful and dangerous?
Sure. Usually it starts with just either wanting to eat healthy or lose a few pounds. If you want to go according to laxatives, sometimes they will rationalize and think that whether they're constipated or, you know, they sell a lot on commercials or on radio stations or on about laxative teas or cleanses, juices, ways to cleanse their systems. So a lot of times it will sell to teenagers about, especially the dieter's tea, which is more of a laxative tea or herbal supplement. So they'll think that it's okay and it's healthy. So they'll start in that regard. And all of a sudden, this stuff they don't realize can actually be very dangerous to that system and very addictive. So once they will start taking that and start releasing themselves, they think that, oh, that's a great way to start losing weight. And their mindset, they'll think that they can eat and release it or lose weight by taking this laxative supplement, not realizing that it's a way of purging. So it's, you know, they'll start eating more, using this laxative tea, and then not realizing that their body's adjusting to a certain amount, and they'll need more and more to get that same release. And if it doesn't work, they'll start researching other ways to having that laxative effect, which is going to the drugstore and getting over-the-counter laxatives, which is then going into the bulimic way of purging. So it leads into other ways of developing the eating disorder and gets progressively worse.
Right. So if a mom will call you, you're a therapist, and mm-hmm. if a mom would call you and say, I noticed that my daughter, my son, is not eating like they used to. I see some changes in their behavior. My daughter, you know,
wants to be skinny. She talks about it all the time. There's a lot of peer pressure. Is a mom supposed to force feed? Is a mom supposed to say, here, I want to watch you sit down and eat. Can you talk a little bit about what happens when the parent, you know, finds out for the first time this is more than just not being hungry tonight? This has become a pattern with their son or their daughter.
I would suggest at that point, before it escalates into a worse pattern, is to get help as soon as possible. Nip it in the bud, because that is a sign that it's starting to get out of control. If your child is starting to eat, you know, watch themselves a little bit, but is not really restricting too much, then that's okay. But when they're starting to skip meals, taking very little to school, you know, then it's a sign that it's getting really much worse. And that's a sign that the child needs help. If they're just starting to watch themselves and eating healthier, that's okay. You know, they might just want to be eating healthy and they're switching their way of eating, and that's okay. You know, but when it's starting to get to a little bit of an extreme, get the help then, before it gets out of control. Don't wait too long, because if you can nip it in the bud before it gets too long and too hard, then it's going to be harder. So why not catch it before it gets too out of control?
So they shouldn't be a food police.
No, that's the worst thing you could do for the child. Never watch and make sure the child's eating, because then it becomes a power struggle between the parents and the child.
Yes. So
that's not what you want.
So what you're saying is that at the beginning, home-based therapy is the best thing to do. Meaning, don't run to get your kid to get admitted to a hospital. Call early on. And that's, MASC is about prevention. And we are asking all our listeners, please don't wait until it escalates into something that you will not be able to deal with alone anymore at home. Eating disorder moves very quickly along. So when a parent sees that their child has disordered eating habits, different than they did prior to when they started, and you're seeing something different, pick up a phone, call MASC, call somebody. There are many agencies, many wonderful therapists like Deborah Bodenheim, like Sarah Bateman, and other therapists. There are other organizations in the FRM community that also we can help connect you to if you're noticing that your child, your loved one, your husband, your wife, your sibling may have an eating disorder. So don't wait until it escalates. Call early. And then we can try and figure out, based on your insurance, private pay, whatever it is that you may need, we will help get you there as quickly as possible so that you can get your loved one the help they need. Deborah, can you discuss with our listeners what sort of therapy is offered once the client is willing to go to therapy?
Well, the basic form of treatment, I mean, it's usually they're going to need a multidisciplinary team, which is regular psychotherapy, which is going to be probably usually cognitive behavioral, which is CBT. Then they're going to need a nutritionist. It depends how intense or how much the client or the child or the adult, whoever it is, the patient at this point, is the intensity of the eating disorder. And if it's, they might need nutritional counseling, they might need a psychiatrist. So it really needs to be evaluated on the case per evaluation. And so the therapy is usually CBT, could be psychodynamic, behavioral. So it's really, as need basis. But a lot of it is CBT.
Right. So there, once it does get more extreme, the stage, then the doctors may recommend that the client gets admitted to a hospital that deals with this, to a rehab that deals with it. Can we talk about trauma and how trauma many times does turn into an eating disorder for many?
Yes. A lot of times I found in my practice, there's a lot of cases of sexual abuse that there's, you know, a lot of times there's girls, boys who have been sexually abused. There's, in terms of, you know, they don't want to, they try to repress it that way, and they, a lot of anorexics, they don't want to develop and become women because they've been sexually abused, and they don't want to become sexual beings, or they become obese because they don't want to be attractive because they've been sexually abused, and boys as well don't want to have that, feel sexual, so they'll, that's a way they'll run away from their emotions. So I found that a lot more in my practice than any other kind of trauma was more the sexual abuse. But it's any kind of trauma, really, whether it's not even sexual abuse, is physical abuse. It's a way of turning away. It's another coping skill of avoiding emotion, you know, just not wanting to feel. Not wanting to feel, not wanting to remember.
Yeah.
Trauma that's happened in childhood or any kind of trauma that's happened in their life. It's a way to repress.
Yes, just like drugs, alcohol, some self-mutilation, some cut themselves. I know that we have clients, we have parents called in on the Mask Helpline, where their daughters or sons didn't want to go swimming in the summer in camp. They didn't want to take a bathing suit with them, and they had no idea. The girls were cutting on their legs, above their elbows, on their arms, and self-mutilation, just another way of control. There's so many different ways. Some people do drugs. Some people do alcohol. And eating disorder is just another form of control for one's pain that they may not be dealing with in the mental health arena that's available for everybody today. It's so available that if someone gets molested, like you mentioned, if there's a trauma in the home that we're carrying with us, it can turn into an eating disorder. I'm wondering, can you talk about, can you discuss with us medications? When are eating disorder patients medicated? At what point sometimes?
Well, the medication is very helpful when the psychiatrist, when they're evaluated and they are depressed and they're feeling anxious, and help them get through these hard points, because a lot of times underneath that, to get through these difficult points, a lot of when they start feeling, the emotions get very overwhelming, and you know, sometimes the depression starts coming out and the anxiety. And in order for them to balance the emotion, they need these medications to make them feel, to help the emotions and stabilize them a little bit, because it's so overwhelming for them. Because they've been repressing it for so long.
Yeah, well, a lot of the parents say that they may have been molested in fourth grade and third grade, now they're 17 and 23 years old and 39 years old, and it's coming out for some, whatever reason, and they've developed eating disorders and never shared even these traumas in their lives. So what would you like to say to the parents before we close our show this evening, for the mothers, for the fathers that are listening, about sons, daughters, sisters, brothers, spouses, relatives, someone out there in your family that may be suffering from an eating disorder that you know what to do. What
a couple of things. Number one is for the friends and the siblings and for the people who know of someone who's suffering of eating disorders, of cutting, of anything, of any kind of pain, and they're telling you not to tell anybody. Don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. I know it's hard for you to hold it a secret, and you don't want to betray your friends. You need to betray the friend or the family member, because even though they might be angry at you for a while, you will be saving their life. So you need to tell that person's parents or a loved one and get them help, because in a way they're crying out for help. So you need to let somebody know. That's number one. Number two, for the parents out there that are worried about their child's shidduch, please, please get your child the help and not worry about the shidduch, because I guarantee if this child gets married and they're suffering from an eating disorder or if they're suffering from some kind of addiction or cutting, you will not be doing a service to the marriage or to the child, because this marriage will not be good. Save your child, okay? Don't worry about the family. Save the child. She or he is in pain. Get them the help. Get them the help and stop worrying about the family's reputation. You know, that's what I see. What about the shidduch? What about the family reputation? What about this? We need to keep it quiet. Get the child the help. You know, that's my message, because that's what I see too often. That's what I need to say.
Right. You know, we got a letter from a parent once, and somebody want to share it with our listeners. We are talking about eating disorders. And we have Devorah Bodenheim with us. I just want to share something a mom wrote. She wrote, "But once we understood that the things she feared were the things she needed, we knew we had to save her life and her future. In time, as her brain repaired, we began letting her take responsibility back. It was frightening for her to start making choices again, but we were alongside her and supporting her all the way with the therapy. Didn't she hate you people last? Yes, at the time she did, but it wasn't her. It was her illness that hate us." And that I want to share with our listeners, that the illness, when a parent has to face doing something that our child does not want us to be doing, getting her the help she needs against her will, you need to remember it's the illness that is fighting with us, not our daughters, not our sons, not our relatives. We need to help save our family members from whatever illness, the mental illness that they're struggling with. And it isn't easy. It's very hard. And we're not always successful with doing it. And it's not only eating disorders. It's other mental health issues, schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, anxiety, drugs and alcohol, many, many different mental health issues that are facing our families, that Family Matters, our radio show, every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m., we discuss different issues called Family Matters. Next week, Amir Tashem, we have on some very, very special professionals that are going to address the issue of anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety. Times are hard out there. Kids are struggling. Pressures are high. And things do escalate. So we are going to be talking about anxiety next week. Devorah, I want to thank you for joining us this evening. And if anybody wants to speak with Devorah Bodenheim, you can call MASC 718-758-0400 and we can connect you with Devorah Bodenheim or Sarah Bateman or Marcia that was on earlier this evening, and we can connect you to different rehabs, therapists in your community, in your neighborhood, close to home or your work, so you can get to an eating disorder specialist early so that it doesn't escalate. Devorah, thank you very much, Devorah, for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. Thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
718-758-0400. Feel free to call MASC for a referral or support groups for parents. Feel free to call us from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. We're available. You can call anonymous. Write down the number that you may be able to help somebody. Thank you, and have a good night and a good Shabbos.
ACE has always been the helpful place, and we're about to get even more helpful by offering instant savings to ACE Rewards members. Not a member? Just sign up when you get here to start saving right at the register.
ACE Corner Hardware is celebrating Memorial Day with memorable prices through May 29th. Check out their outdoor collection. Save $100 on a three-person swing with canopy for only $179.99. Super special relaxer chair, $34.99. Limit two per customer. Seven-piece outdoor dining set, $499. Weber grill, only $399, with free assembly and free local delivery. Folding rocking chair, $59.99. And stacking chairs, only $22.99. Be the lucky owner of your very own pet bird when you shop from ACE's extensive outdoor collection and enter a drawing to win $250 towards your favorite bird and cage. ACE has it all. ACE Corner Hardware, 2266 Nostrand Avenue, Wheaton Avenue's H&I in Brooklyn. Parking is available.
ACE, the helpful place.
ACE is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
See store for details. Must be an ACE Rewards member to receive instant savings. Available through the end of the month.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, Rachama Bystritsky-Klapman, who runs MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, they're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters, and if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bystritsky-Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
ACE has always been the helpful place, and we're about to get even more helpful by offering instant savings to ACE Rewards members. Not a member? Just sign up when you get here to start saving right at the register.
ACE Corner Hardware is celebrating Memorial Day with memorable prices through May 29th. Check out their outdoor collection. Save $100 on a three-person swing with canopy for only $179.99. Super special relaxer chair, $34.99. Limit two per customer. Seven-piece outdoor dining set, $499. Weber grill, only $399, with free assembly and free local delivery. Folding rocking chair, $59.99. And stacking chairs, only $22.99. Be the lucky owner of your very own pet bird when you shop from ACE's extensive outdoor collection and enter a drawing to win $250 towards your favorite bird and cage. ACE has it all. ACE Corner Hardware, 2266 Nostrand Avenue, Wheaton Avenue's H&I in Brooklyn. Parking is available.
ACE, the helpful place.
ACE is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
See store for details. Must be an ACE Rewards member to receive instant savings. Available through the end of the month.
Did you ever consider hosting your own radio or television show? We can help you get on the air. Talkline Communications works with broadcasters as well as with TV and radio stations in New York and nationwide that lease time, all at competitive rates. We work with doctors, lawyers, and other professionals, as well as with ethnic broadcasters. For more information about hosting your own radio or TV show, please call 212-769-1925. 212-769-1925. And out of New York, call 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW. That's 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW.
Please become a fan of Talk Line with Zeb Brenner on Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, and YouTube. On Twitter at Talk Line Network. If you have an Android phone, please download our free app in the Google Store. For iPhones, download the Jewish Radio app. Of course, tune in 24 hours a day at TalkLineCommunications.com or our 24-hour-a-day listen line at 401-347-0304, extension 1, for nonstop Jewish broadcasting.